It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Search for opponents of Gambian president follows attempted coup. Deadly Kashmir border skirmish between India and Pakistan. I'm Ray Kugel reporting from Washington. Forces loyal to the president of Gambia are going house to house in the capital Banjul in search of opponents responsible for the armed attack on his presidential palace this week. President Yahya Jammeh says that the pre-dawn attack Tuesday was carried out by former members of the military. President Jammeh insisted it was not a coup attempt against him, but an attack by what he called terrorists. Mr. Jammeh was out of the country at the time of the incident. The French news agency quotes a Gambian intelligence source as saying that dozens of the president's political opponents have been arrested, interrogated, and jailed. The government has not publicly confirmed that. An Egyptian appeals court overturned an initial verdict that sentenced three Al Jazeera English journalists from 7 to 10 years in prison, paving the way for a retrial. Edward Duranian reports.
The appellate court decision to throw out the verdict in the case of three Al Jazeera TV journalists drew applause and criticism after the judicial panel ruled the men must be retried. But the presiding judge said he did not have the authority to release the men on bail. Reporters were not allowed to attend the court session, and the ruling was handed down quickly. Family members of the three journalists, as well as their attorneys, expressed anger that the men were not acquitted or released on bail. Edward Uranian, Cairo.
A suicide bomber blew himself up at the gates of a church in northeastern Nigeria, disrupting a New Year's Day service. Thursday's blast in the city of Gombe did not kill anyone, but there were several injuries. This is VOA News. Bad weather hampered the New Year's Day search for that crashed Air Asia jet in the Java Sea. Heavy rain and wind grounded helicopters searching for bodies and wreckage. A team of Indonesian divers is on standby to swim 30 to 50 meters to the ocean floor to look for a large dark object detected by sonar. Authorities say it could be the wreckage of the airliner that disappeared in a storm last Sunday with 162 passengers and crew. Nine bodies and assorted debris have been pulled from the waters near Borneo Island, where the plane went down. A stampede during a New Year's Eve celebration in Shanghai killed 36 people and injured dozens of others. China's state-run Xinhua news agency says 40 people were still hospitalized Thursday, 13 with serious injuries. VOA's Bill Ide has details.
Shanghai authorities say the stampede occurred on a stairway at the popular riverfront area, or Bund as it is called. State media say the chaos began less than half an hour before midnight. Video footage posted on China's Youku website showed scores of revelers pinned on a stairway that led up to a riverfront platform. As police and onlookers yelled at the crowd urging people to move back, individuals could be seen collapsing and crushing one another. The crowd gradually dispersed, but for some, it was already too late. Bill Ide, VOA News, Beijing.
The crowd was running after what they thought was money being tossed from a third-floor window. Afghanistan is investigating whether soldiers fired a rocket at a wedding party, killing at least 26 people Wednesday in southern Helmand province. Police believe the rocket was fired from a nearby army checkpoint. The UN says most of the victims were women and children. Pakistan says India ambushed and killed two border security forces who were invited for a routine meeting by their Indian counterparts. India says something else. Ayaz Ghul explains.
The Pakistan Rangers Punjab, the paramilitary force patrolling the eastern border with India, say that a commander from the Indian side had requested a routine meeting, and when two of its representatives contacted them, the Indians opened fire. Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Tasneem Aslam told reporters in Islamabad about what she called the deadly ambush.
Our soldiers were invited for a meeting with white flags, and then they were ambushed. So this is a violation of international law and also a violation of our bilateral understandings.
India, however, has accused Pakistan of initiating the incident, which it says first killed an Indian soldier and prompted retaliatory fire from Indian border forces. Ayaz Ghul for VOA News, Islamabad.
I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, January 2nd, 2015. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Zambia's only female presidential candidate says the country needs a good leader.
I am in this race because Zambia needs a leader. Yes, it helps if you're a woman, because as a woman, I possess abilities that my colleagues do not possess.
Edip Nawakwi is the candidate for the Forum for Democracy and Development in Zambia. Today, Friday, is the deadline for FDLR rebels in the DRC to disarm or face military action. A South Sudan bishop calls on warring parties to end the country's civil war. And Ghana church leaders call for an agenda for national development.
We've launched a public awareness, public education program, just trying to engage government, engage civil society. The need for us to have a long-term planning for the development of our nation.
Reverend Kwabena Opuni-Frimpong is General Secretary of the Christian Council of Ghana. An Angolan journalist is charged with libel for revealing alleged human rights abuses. And three Zimbabwe mobile phone companies agreed to slash voice tariffs by nearly 30%. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zambia's only female candidate in the upcoming January 20th special presidential election says she is in the race because the country needs a true leader and not because she is a woman. Edith Nawakwi of the Forum for Democracy and Development says her party is the most respected and attractive political organization in Zambia today, particularly in light of the intra-party fighting that has been taking place recently, both in the ruling Patriotic Front Party and the main opposition movement for multi-party democracy. Nawakwi tells me the root causes of poverty in Zambia today are corruption and over-centralized government.
We are not in this race just because I'm a woman candidate. I feel that among the candidates standing in Zambia, they possess I think the opportunity to do much better than my colleagues. I think that for a long time in Zambia, the voters are saying that it's an opportune time for a female candidate.
People say there's too much interfighting instead of talking about the ordinary Zambians. What's good for the ordinary Zambians? What do you make of the political infighting?
There's a lot of intra-party fighting. The ruling party, they've been fighting and taking each other to court. The former ruling party, that is the Movement for Multi-Party Democracy, the leaders in there have been fighting and taking each other's court. And that's the space that we come in to fill, because as a party ourselves, we are the most peaceful party and the most attractive.
Madam, you have just said that you are in this race not because you are a woman. But do you think it's time for a woman president in Zambia?
I am in this race because Zambia needs a leader. Yes, it helps if you're a woman, because as a woman, I possess abilities that my colleagues do not possess. And I think that it helps to move the country forward from where we are. There's abject poverty. There's a lot of work that has to be done to rebuild the country. People have been living on broken promises, and this is a time when we should be moving the country forward and be able to look at how we can break the yoke of poverty that our people are engulfed in.
What would you do differently if you were elected?
I believe that we have to look at why our continent still continues to lag behind, and is lagged behind certainly because we are not looking at how we can create wealth at household level. We have systems of governance which are over-centralized, and that has to be broken. We have to decentralize. We have to engage the youth, engage the women in development, and that's the only time that Africa can move forward. So, yes, there will be a difference in approach. The difference is that we have to concentrate on breaking the root cause of poverty, and that is corruption caused by over-centralized governance. And once that is broken, we can then begin to engage the back of the African people and the Zambian people in development.
Edith Nwankwe is Zambia's only female presidential candidate in the upcoming January 20th presidential election. She was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. One of the longest-standing rebel groups in the Democratic Republic of Congo is facing a deadline today, Friday, to disarm or face military action from UN peacekeepers and the Congolese armed forces. As viewers Gabe Jaslow reports, some members of the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, or known also as FDLR, have reportedly surrendered, but the international community says it is not enough.
In July, regional heads of state gave the FDLR 6 months to fully disarm or face military action. That deadline comes on Friday, January 2nd. The group, which was formed by Hutu fighters responsible for the 1994 Rwandan genocide, has been accused of committing atrocities in the eastern Congo. The Congolese military and the United Nations peacekeeping force, MONUSCO, have promised to take action against the FDLR if the rebels fail to lay down their weapons. In a call with reporters Tuesday, U.S. Special Envoy to the Great Lakes region, Russell Feingold, said the United States also supports the use of military force against the group.
As the group has clearly demonstrated over the past 6 months, that a purely voluntary surrender process will not work to end the threat from this illegitimate armed group. Instead, military action must be undertaken to pressure the FDLR to lay down its arms.
Last Sunday, about 150 FDLR soldiers reportedly surrendered to Congolese authorities in North Kivu province. Feingold says the latest estimates suggest there are still about 1,400 fighters at large. Rwanda, which considers the FDLR one of its greatest threats, disapproved of the decision to give the group more time to disarm. Rwandan officials have called into question whether the Congolese army and UN forces are really ready to eliminate the rebels. Special Envoy Feingold dismissed these doubts.
I have received repeated assurances from the key stakeholder countries that they are committed to ending the threat of the FDLR and are prepared to follow up that commitment with action.
In 2013, the same collaboration of UN and Congolese forces successfully defeated the M23 rebel group, which had seized control of territory in eastern Congo. UN experts and rights groups have accused Rwanda of supporting the M23 in part to shore up its defenses against the FDLR. Gabe Joslo, VOA News, Nairobi.
The Christian Council of Ghana has launched the Ghana We Want Agenda campaign to encourage the country's leaders to come up with a 50-year national development program. Reverend Kwabena Opuni-Frimpong, General Secretary of the group, says the Christian Council of Ghana, a faith-based institution, wants the country to have a common dream. To achieve this goal, he says the council plans to work with other faith-based institutions, traditional rulers, business organizations, and all political parties.
So what we are doing is we've launched a public awareness, public education program, just trying to engage government, engage civil society. The need for us to have a long-term planning for the development of our nation. It must be done, else development remain firefighting. You know, people come to office 4 years, 8 years, 12 years, and they want to do something quickly just to give impression that they've done their bit. But we must have a national agenda, national dream. And we are saying that Africans should not stop dreaming. We must keep dreaming. And we work towards that rather than responding to political manifestos. If we're able to have a national dream, a national agenda, then the political parties will come to power, will be responding to the destination we have all designed for ourselves as a people.
Reverend Opuni-Frimpong, how do you intend to actualize this program that you've outlined?
We are a faith-based institution. We are not directly in governance. But in democracy, civil must also play a key role by drawing government attention on the concerns of the people. Now, that is what we are doing, and that's what we have started doing, that we will continue our public education just to draw attention, especially as we get closer to next year, 2016 election, that Ghana must have a common dream, a long-term dream the Ghana we want, the next 3 years agenda.
With this advocacy that the Christian Council of Ghana is involved in, will there be other faith-based organizations, including the traditional leaders or other religious organizations?
We have initiated a journey, a process, but we hope we will be able to attract the attention. So far, it's been very interesting, those who are calling to share their thoughts in what we are talking about. But I hope we will get there so that at least there will be a platform for people to share their dream and their passion for our country, and that we will be serious and will be committed. Africa cannot always be at the mercy of others. We must give young people hope in Ghana. Young people must find hope, and somebody must plan it. It will never drop. If we don't work at it, if we don't invest in it, we will never see it. But Africa must give hope to its young people, and Ghana must make sure young people feel confident and hopeful.
Reverend Kwabena Oponi-Frimpong is General Secretary of the Christian Council of Ghana. He spoke with reporter Peter Clarty from the capital, Accra. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, January 2nd, 2015. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16.5 minutes past the hour. A religious leader in South Sudan says citizens need to focus on their personal commitment to peace in Africa's youngest country. Bishop Rudolf Deng of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Wau says he is saddened by the ongoing conflict. Deng urged the warring sides to end the fighting and prevent any more families from losing their loved ones. VOA fellow Michael Atit of South Sudan in Focus program has more from Washington.
Bishop Deng says people need to learn how to live together if South Sudan is to avoid another year like this one.
I see people in 2014, everybody trying to see a new beginning. Yeah, they're turning a new page in relationships, in personal commitment to peace, to reconciliation, yes. People at last have begun to digest the value of peace, the need to forgive, the need to reconcile, and to move on with life. Life goes on.
Deng says the slow-moving peace talks in Addis Ababa should not only concentrate those in power, but also in ordinary South Sudanese. The negotiators and mediators have to start focusing on the needs of the people in South Sudan, Deng says.
It's not just a question of power, but it's a question of integrity, it's a question of law and order, it's a question of justice, accountability. These are the issues that they need to debate, yes, when they are discussing and they are debating in Addis Ababa.
He says the church is doing what it can to support peace initiative, but it is up to the government and the armed opposition to reach the lasting peace deal. Talks to end the year-old conflict in South Sudan were put in an indefinite hold 2 weeks ago. Bishop Deng is hopeful that in 2015, the warring parties will reach a deal that will stop more blood being shed in the country. He says South Sudanese have suffered enough and urgently need peace.
My hope is that the people achieve that the people have reached the rock bottom. But I don't think we can go any further deeper than this. It's a day of reckoning. I think we can only rise. I don't think people can go down any deeper, yes.
Bishop Deng is a member of the National Healing and Reconciliation Committee, which was formed by President Salva Kiir in April last year. Then Vice President Riek Machar led the committee before he was fired in July 2013. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Washington.
The trial of Angolan journalist Rafael Marquich de Moraes on libel charges, which is expected to take place December 15 in Luanda, has been postponed to March 24 this year. De Moraes is charged with criminal libel for exposing alleged human rights abuses in the diamond-producing province of Lunda Nuate in northeastern Angola. The case was brought by 7 Angolan military generals. Journalist De Moraes says the charges stem from a book he wrote entitled Blood Diamonds, Torture and Corruption in Angola, in which he recounts more than 500 cases of torture and 100 killings allegedly carried out over a period of 18 months in the districts of Kuango and Zamutaba.
I have been charged of 9 charges of criminal libel against the 7 generals and 2 diamond companies because of the human rights abuses I have exposed in the diamond industry.
So who is bringing the charges against you, the generals or the government?
The charges are being brought by the government, which has taken pain by it considers the crime to be a public crime. Therefore, the charges are being brought by public prosecution on the grounds that the generals who are co-owners of the private security company responsible for the human rights abuses and have high responsibilities in the Angolan armed forces, which also are responsible for part of the human rights abuses, did not have any knowledge of such abuses, and therefore I could not have mentioned them in the case because they're only owners of the companies and have no day-to-day management duties in these companies they own. But also what is important to note is that prior to publishing the book 6 months before, I submitted all the cases of torture and killing, a total of 500 cases of torture and over 100 cases of killing, to the companies responsible for that, because most of these crimes happened within the diamond concession awarded to one company, Sociedad Minera do Cuango, and the judge has called on the trial, has not subpoenaed my witnesses. So I'm not being allowed to take witnesses to the trial.
Why not?
The judge has not given any explanation, simply has ignored my request for the witnesses to be summoned and to be heard in court, just ignored completely.
Do you have a lawyer?
I have a lawyer, yes.
Is this kind of a trend in Africa where journalists have been sued when they write something, or do you think journalists need to be a little bit more careful?
It's sheer intimidation, because it's not a question of being more careful. It's a question of presenting the facts. And I'm talking about abuses involving over 500 cases of torture that are very well documented.
What is the lesson here for young journalists who are coming up? What lesson would you like for them to draw from this?
The lesson is be prepared to face harsh punishment if you tell the truth and if you really think that the journalism is a profession that is committed to expose the truth.
Rafael Mankish de Marais is an Angolan journalist. He was speaking with me from the capital, Luanda. 3 mobile phone service providers in Zimbabwe have agreed to slash voice tariffs by almost 30% in compliance with a directive issued by the country's Post and Telecommunications Regulatory Authority. The move will see tariffs dropping from about 23 cents per minute to 15 cents. In October last year, Telecommunications Regulatory Authority ordered the 3 companies to reduce their tariffs after carrying out a study which revealed that users were being overcharged by 30%. John Mufukari is director of the Economists and Employers Confederation of Zimbabwe. He says the slashing of tariffs is a welcome development.
I think this is very good news for the users. I am looking at a situation now where there should be a gradual and general upsurge in business, because people should be able to talk more, they should be able to get more for the amount of money that they are paying on their cell. It might actually result in the companies concerned getting more than they were getting at the higher charge.
Looking at the cost of living and the effects of this reduction, can we see people losing their jobs here?
It's possible, because we don't know how the service providers are going to be looking at this reduction. What we are looking at, however, is a situation where there is definitely going to be more usage of voice services than was the case before. And this should work as an ameliorating factor. And I would therefore not expect to be seeing too many people having to be laid off or anything like that.
At one time, Econet Wireless wanted to reduce its tariffs, but Potras refused to give it permission to do so. What could have prompted this decision now?
You see, this is why I was saying it is unlikely that there will be too many economic consequences on this decision, because Econet had voluntarily offered to reduce its charges, but the potras took it as an anti-competitive move and therefore refused to let them do that. So what it means, obviously, is the charges we are paying need not be as high as they are now. And that's why I suspect that there shouldn't be too much disadvantage to the service providers.
John Mufukari is director of the Economist and Employers Confederation of Zimbabwe. He was speaking with reporter John Gakandi Miri of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with handball. Tunisia plays Belarus at the Four Nations Yellow Cup in Winterthur, Switzerland today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, they face Slovenia before engaging Switzerland on Sunday. The contest is a warm-up ahead of the Men's World Handball Championships due to start in Doha, Qatar on the 15th of January. Turning to athletics, Ethiopian Dawit Admasu pipped Kenyan Stanley Koech to win the San Silvestre 15-kilometer road race in Sao Paulo, Brazil on Wednesday night. Admasu clocked 45 minutes and 4 seconds, a mere 1 second ahead of Koech, while Tanzanian Fabiano Nasi was third. Meanwhile, Wuda Aieleu and Nesanet Gudeta Kebede ensured a 1-2 Ethiopian triumph in the women's race. Kenyan Priska Jepto was placed third. In Spain, Kenyan Mike Keegan clocked 27 minutes and 51 seconds to prevail in the men's contest at the San Silvestre 10-kilometer road race in Madrid on Wednesday night. Morocco's Malika Asasa was runner-up to Britain's Gemma Steele in the women's contest. Moving on to football, the Republic of Congo's national team, the Red Devils, commenced their training camp for the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations in the capital, Brazzaville, today, Friday. A week later, they travel to Dakar, Senegal, to play Cape Verde Islands in a build-up match before they embark on their first Nations Cup campaign since the year 2000. In Senegal, the Lions of Teranga assemble in Dakar today, Friday, before they meet Senegal's head of state, Macky Fall, tomorrow, Saturday. They then head to El Jadida in Morocco to polish up their tactics. During their 12-day stay in El Jadida, they'll play friendlies against Guinea and Gabon. Meanwhile, here in South Africa, the Stallions of Burkina Faso arrive in Mbombela, Mpumalanga province for their final preparations for the Nations Cup today, Friday. It was in Mbombela 2 years ago where they mounted their group stage campaign that culminated in their playing in the finals of the tournament. That was the best performance ever by the Stallions in their Nations Cup history. While in Mbombela, they'll play Swaziland on the 10th of January and Botswana on the 13th of January in build-up encounter. Finally, Zambia's Chipolopolo play hosts South Africa's Bafana Bafana in their only build-up match ahead of their Nations Cup campaign in Soweto on Sunday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Owen in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A suicide bomber has blown himself up at the gates of a church in northeastern Nigeria, disrupting New Year's Day service. Officials said Thursday's blast in the city of Gombe did not kill anyone, but several people were injured. The bomber was stopped by security guards from entering the church. No group has claimed responsibility. An Egyptian court has ruled that three jailed Al Jazeera journalists will get a new trial. And that's it for this Friday, January 2nd, 2015 edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Tracy Carter, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as Post Editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jim Harmon, I'm James Butt in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very good weekend.
African Music Mix.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African Music Mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. North to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best. Tune in from 0 to 300 hours UTC and from 11 to 1300 hours UTC every single day on The Voice of America.